Given certain suspicions both Garvey and Doyle had come to nourish about just who had actually been responsible for Prince Hector's murder, the general longed for the opportunity to discuss a few matters face to face with Father Adrian. "But it's not going to happen. He's gone too deeply to ground for that," Garvey thought bitterly. "I know the bastard is somewhere inside the city. I know it. But I don't have a clue where, and without that..." Crash! The sudden sound of shattering glass yanked Garvey up out of his thoughts. He came to his feet, right hand reaching instinctively for the hilt of the dagger he'd taken off when he entered the study. He spun towards the study windows, which looked out over the landscaped garden in the townhouse's square central plaza, half-crouched, and his heart raced. He waited, muscles taut, wondering how someone had gotten past his sentries. But nothing else happened. It was so quiet, he could hear the ticking of the clock in one corner. Actually hear the quiet swish-click sound of the pendulum as it swung steadily, monotonously. After a few moments, he felt himself relaxing, a little at least, and straightened from his semi-crouch. There was no light beyond the windows, and he stepped cautiously around the end of the desk, eyes sweeping back and forth, then stopped once more. There was a rock on his carpet, lying in a halo of glass fragments. It wasn't a large rock, but his eyes narrowed as he realized someone had wrapped something around it before launching it through his study window. He walked across to it, hearing broken glass crunch under his boots, and picked it up a bit gingerly. It was wrapped in paper, tied with twine, and he held it in his left hand, using the fingers of his right hand to brush away the slivers of glass which clung to it. His brow furrowed, and he walked the rest of the way to the broken window, looking out through the shattered panes. Moonlight spilled down over the garden. The pools of silver and inky black were enough to confuse the eye, but not so badly that he couldn't tell that the garden was empty. No one larger than a midget could have hidden behind its shrubbery or flower beds. So whoever had thrown this through the window obviously hadn't hung about to see how Garvey was going to react. But how had they gotten into the garden in the first place? And having gotten there, how had they gotten back out unseen? Garvey knew the quality of the troopers assigned to guard his residence. If any of them had seen or heard anything, including the sound of breaking glass, his study would be full of armed, angry, alert men at this very moment. Which, manifestly, it was not. He walked back across the glass-crunching carpet and sat back down behind his desk, laying the paper-wrapped rock on the blotter in front of him. He gazed down at it for several seconds, then used a penknife to cut the twine and unwrapped it. The paper was an envelope, he realized, and his own name was written on the outside. He wasn't particularly surprised by the fact that, to the best of his knowledge, he'd never before seen the handwriting, but he felt a tingle of odd excitement as he weighed the envelope in his fingers and realized it must contain several sheets of paper. He had no idea why his unknown correspondent had chosen to deliver his mail in so unconventional a fashion, but he doubted that it would have taken more than a single sheet to express even the most passionate of death threats, which suggested this must be something quite different from what he'd initially assumed it must be. He used the same penknife to slit the envelope and extracted its contents. There were 8 sheets of paper, thin and expensive, covered with closely spaced lines written in the same neat, precise hand as the address on the outside of the envelope. He laid them on the blotter and adjusted his desk lamp, then bent over the letter curiously.